Does your company have a good wellness program? See how it stacks up against the healthiest employers of Indiana and across the country. Visit us online at healthiestemployers.com to join the community and start your application today.
What a ride it's been for Indianapolis tech entrepreneur Chris Baggin. From the pinnacle, ringing the bell on the grand stage of Wall Street, to blazing a new trail in the rich soil of Indiana.
I purchased a farm, Tyner Pond Farm, we're in Hancock County, and I started turning corn and soybean land into pasture. And I started raising cattle and beef and chickens. And what I wanted to see was, can we in fact compete with the factory system for animals doing it a different way without drugs, antibiotics, confinement, that sort of thing, without the pollution, chemicals, all of that? And the answer, of course, was yes.
Chris Baggett's vision and passion for providing healthy food extends far beyond the farm. He also has his hands in the kitchen with his popular data-based delivery-only food business, Cluster Truck.
We have to cook the food to make this work. We didn't set out to cook the food. We thought we'd just be technology provider. But the reality is you have to control every nuance.
A futurist, a disruptor, an idea guy who thinks outside the box, always ahead of the curve. Learn more about Chris Baggett's amazing business journey, from a dry cleaning business to co-founding digital marketing giant ExactTarget, to sowing his desire to produce healthy food and transforming the way fresh food is delivered. Chris Baggett is my guest this week on the Business and Beyond podcast. Hello and welcome to the Business and Beyond podcast presented by PNC. I'm Gary Dick. Chris Baggett has always had an ability to come up with technology-driven solutions to solve problems. Back in the early 90s, he acquired Sanders Dry Cleaners in Greenfield, thought he could grow the business by connecting directly with customers, so he put up a sign on the counter asking them to share their email addresses. Well, he took that concept and co-founded what would become a major force in the world of digital marketing, ExactTarget. Chris, his brother-in-law Scott Dorsey, and Peter McCormick launched the company out of a windowless office behind a McDonald's in Greenfield. ExactTarget eventually selling to Salesforce for a cool $2.5 billion, a deal that would set the table for Indy's burgeoning tech scene today. Chris has also had a passion for agriculture and food. In 2010, he founded Tyner Pond Farm in Hancock County, his wife's Amy's stomping grounds. And just 5 years ago, Chris used his tech expertise to create Cluster Truck, a fast-growing, technology-driven, delivery-only restaurant that is growing in Indiana and well beyond. He's faced his share of challenges, too. For the first time publicly, he'll share a personal battle with cancer. And I'm very pleased to welcome on the podcast this week, tech entrepreneur and a tech trailblazer, Chris Baggett. Chris, thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Gary. Thank you.
You know, I think so many people know of your technology pedigree, co-founder of ExactTarget, Compendium, which was a content marketing platform you ultimately sold to Oracle. But how does a tech guy like you get into the food and agriculture business?
Well, you know, I do a lot of reading, you know, I'm able to see problems and as opportunities, and you know, like farming was just one of those things. Like, wow, somebody had to do something, and well, why not me? You know, you know, I read The Omnivore's Dilemma back in probably 2006 or seven, and you know, I used to drive around and look at the corn in Indiana and be like, wow, this is amazing. And boy, the corn sure looks good. And, you know, then you read that book and you just can't look at it the same way. And food like we grow on Tyner Pond, right? Grass-fed, pasture-raised, humane, no drugs, you know, is a rapidly growing market. It's a supply problem, not a demand problem. More farmers need to be doing what we're doing. We cannot keep up. And, you know, it just seems like, wow, this is a big opportunity. And nobody seems to be doing it well. What can we do?
And yeah, you obviously have a passion for this. You launched Tyner Pond Farm in 2010. At the time, as I look back on this, you made the statement that you bought it to feed people, not profits.
Yeah, definitely. You know, there was a paper written by a professor out of Wisconsin, University of Wisconsin, called "Who's Your Farmer?" Like Hoosier, right? But saying, who is your farmer? And I saw this stat that said, you know, basically we eat in Indiana about $17.9 billion worth of food a year, and 97% of it comes from out of state. Like, we're not even feeding ourselves, you know, and, you know, not feeding your community. And that really became the challenge, right? And the opportunity and the mission, right? Is like, you know, I don't care about feeding the world. Not that I'm heartless, but, you know, let me try and feed my community, like my neighbors, and, you know, of that 17.9, 8.8 of that is meat. And farms like us, you know, collectively, we're probably only about $10 million of that $8.8 billion. So there's a gigantic opportunity to bring this home and turn the farmland that we make these commodities into actual food that we can sell to, you know, our communities, our neighbors.
Well, and you really believe that the food system, if you will, the grocery business, the grocery system is broken. And in a way, you're being very disruptive in that process, especially with a company that I know you have great expectations for, and that's Cluster Truck.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I have to temper my disdain for grocery stores now that I have a partnership with Kroger also. Chris, did you really say this? But, you know, we were online early with Tyner Pond, right? We started in 2018. And I can remember a great woman who was helping us with our marketing. And she was just like, this is weird. Like you're going to bring meat to my house and leave it on my porch. And like, that's weird. And, you know, now obviously online grocery delivery is pretty mainstream. You know, we felt like this was going to be a thing, and it was, right? Why do I, you know, have to let the grocery store curate my food? You know, I think about it like the music industry used to be Best Buy, right? If I wanted to buy a CD or music, I had to go to Best Buy. They had 5,000 CDs, and that was the limit of my choice. And then along comes the iPhone. Now I have 3 million choices. And that not only helped me as a consumer of music have a lot more choice, but it also created this whole economy for musicians, right? You know, my kids, they follow a band called Twiddle. They're scattered all over the country. Twiddle is like someplace that if they're coming to Portland, my kids will all go to Portland where my daughter lives. And that's like a $10 million a year band. And there are thousands and thousands of $10 million a year bands out there. And, you know, same thing, once groceries move online, now I don't need the grocery store to curate my food. Now I can have 10 million Tyner Pond Farms supplying me directly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and as you look at Cluster Truck or that model, it's I think you've described it as a restaurant without a dining room, in a sense. It's a food. It's about food. It's about getting food to people when they want it, how they want it. But it's also so much a technology play. Everything, this whole model is based on technology, which obviously is your sweet spot.
Right, right. You know, the whole system was, you know, looking at third-party deliveries. And I can remember watching Grubhub go public. And, you know, I have Jim Cramer on in the background every morning. And you know, just listening to that story on their IPO day. And it's like, this isn't going to work. You know, we really thought about, you know, time. And that's the one thing that's missing in prepared food delivery is nobody's really looking at seconds here and seconds there and a minute here and a minute there. You know, but they all add up. And so, you know, we thought if we could solve this time problem, you know, there was a famous chef, David Chang, who had written this article and I read, and he was talking about how he was working on this Philly cheesesteak for 6 months to make this Philly cheesesteak still taste good after 45 minutes. And I was just like, well, why don't you solve the 45 minute problem? And, you know, my friend and maybe yours, Neil Brown, you know, when he had Pizzology downtown, and I remember sitting there one day and I'm having lunch and drinking a beer with Neil, and a pizza goes out as takeout. And he's like, oh, I hate that. I was like, why would you hate that? And he's like, well, my pizza, which is this amazing craft pizza, doesn't taste good 10 minutes later, right? It tastes good now, right? And so when it goes out the door, I lose control of when somebody's going to eat it. And that was like a data point, right? Like, man, I need to control this time. I need to make sure that the food is never more than 10 minutes old. And that was the model of, here's our driver, here's the kitchen. If I know the food's going to take 6 minutes to make, don't start cooking it until the driver's only 6 minutes away. And we have, as you know, a tight delivery zone. So we only deliver 6 minutes. So, you know, your whole order time might be 30, 35 minutes, but it's only going to, you know, cook for 6 minutes and you're going to have it in your hands under 10 minutes from the time it was done.
You know, you're growing that concept, Chris, here in Indiana, Indianapolis, a number of locations, but also in other markets around the country, having a lot of success. That really doesn't surprise you, I don't think, because I remember when you launched this, you had some pretty high expectations. You really felt as though Cluster Truck could be a home run.
Yeah, I do. And it is working very well. It's taken us a while to, you know, this is a very hard problem and nobody has figured it out yet. And we are finally to the point where, you know, in our business, you know, the magic word is replicability. Show me a replicable business model. You know, in Exact Target, it came down to kind of salespeople. Like, you know, I could put a guy in Kansas City and in 3 months he'd start turning a profit. And, you know, these salespeople were our replicability. And we've had to work really, really hard on kitchen design, how we cook the food, when we cook the food. We now have this new kitchen model we call Tatum Kitchens, where we're cooking in machines. The food is still actually better, much more consistent. Somebody gave me a quote the other day. Abe Lincoln said, if I had 6 hours to chop down a tree, I'd spend the first 4 hours sharpening my axe. And that's kind of how we feel right now, that we've spent the last 5 years really sharpening our axe. And now we're ready to scale. I mean, we've opened 5 kitchens since October. We have 4 that will open this October, and then 1 in December and another in January. So, you know, we're really on a roll now with this.
Yeah. I've got to ask you, because when I say Cluster Truck on the air, I have to be very careful to pronounce my words. How did you come up with the Cluster Truck name?
Well, I have to give credit to a former food truck person here in Indy, Matt Kornmeyer. And I was talking to Matt about the food truck business one day. And he had mentioned, like, when a food truck is out by themselves, they make X dollars. But when a bunch of food trucks are together, everybody makes more money. And he called those events a cluster truck. And so, you know, turns out nobody had trademarked the word cluster truck. And we were able to acquire the domain. And it, you know, it just really stuck because we thought our food truck, our category is kind of food truck like food, right?
Yeah.
And we wanted to have this broad menu. We wanted to evoke the idea of the food truck and this variety that you would get if you were going to one of these events.
Yeah. I have to ask you, because obviously you've grown a number of businesses, this Cluster Truck business, an enormous undertaking. And it was, as you were doing that a little over 2 years ago, you got a cancer diagnosis, which I don't think you've shared it publicly. Tell me about that. What happened? I know it sounds like you're feeling great and are great right now, but had to be a scare back in 2019.
Yeah, it was definitely, you know, well, nobody wants that, right? And I'm sure every single person who gets that diagnosis is like, you know, me, wait, no, I can't get cancer. But, you know, I was very, very fortunate that, you know, I think in our community, we have great care. I live in Hancock County. We had literally, and Amy and I had, you know, donated to building a brand new cancer facility, Wortman Center for Cancer in Greenfield. And so we have this world-class facility. So again, I was just so lucky that, you know, I had great doctors and great timing, and we had a great facility for my treatment that was, you know, 5 minutes from my home.
How did you find out?
You know, I wound up, I had a lump on my throat right in the corner of my jaw. And I had had a dental procedure done. And when I first felt the lump, I thought it was something associated with that. And I didn't really, I didn't deal with it. I ignored it for probably months. And it turned out that was a swollen lymph node. I had gone to the doctor for something else. He felt that, was like, uh-oh. And I had a biopsy. And then I actually had a surgical biopsy and turned out to be this head and neck cancer, which I hadn't really heard of much, but turns out it's like, it's a super prevalent cancer. It's like almost an epidemic cancer among men our age, mid-50s to early 60s. You know, very treatable, fortunately, but, you know, happening a lot. Turns out I knew 2 other people here in town that had just gone through the same cancer that I did, which was also really nice you know, to have a peer group that you could kind of talk to about your treatment. And I had a stomach tube and, you know, just a whole, you know, stuff that it's nice to talk about to other people that have gone through it.
Right. And the great news is 2 years out, you're 100% cancer free, which is great news. So many times, obviously something like a cancer really does kind of change outlook and those types of things that have that kind of impact on you.
To some extent, you know, I mean, I feel just unbelievably fortunate. You know, the culinary community just lost Greg Hardesty, you know, a week or so ago. You know, it's very unfair, right? And that's really the biggest impact on me is just how unfair life is. You know, like people, you know, that I was in chemo with, you know, that died, you know, and it's just like, man, how do I get to coast through this and other people don't, you know, tearing up a little bit, but it's, you know, it's just, it's that, you know, and I've heard people talk about like this survivor guilt, you know, of why do I get off, you know, and some poor mom, you know, with little babies doesn't, you know, it's just.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. And from a business standpoint, I know as we were talking before we started the podcast, you feel very fortunate to have a team there at Cluster Truck and all the things you do that help sustain the operations, sustain the business through that process, through that challenge.
You know, obviously I'm old and done this, you know, before. So, you know, I've got folks that have been with me for a long time and we've worked together for a long time that, you know what I want and I know what they want. So yeah, I was able to take the time I needed, get my treatment and the business still ran. So
that's good. Well, listen, we are at the point in the podcast where we focus on the 2-minute drill, which we ask a couple quick questions to get some quick answers. Are you up for the task?
I am.
Chris, what's your favorite way to relax?
I enjoy the farm a lot. So, you know, my weekends are spent doing farm work and, you know, being outside.
How about favorite musical artist?
Favorite musical artist? Eric Tobias, Counting Crows, Sister Hazel. I'm very much stuck in the mid 90s.
Good, very good. Do you have a pet peeve?
People who get angry about things that don't matter.
Yeah. Oceans or mountains?
I'm an ocean person, although I don't get there very often.
Okay, what's your favorite Cluster Truck order? Your favorite food on the menu right now at Cluster Truck?
I have a breakfast burrito just about every single day.
I have the Applewood chicken salad, by the way.
Well, that's a Cunningham recipe. I think that Applewood chicken salad is the only item that is on every Cunningham restaurant menu. Brew burger delivery to, I'm pretty sure.
That's outstanding. Do you have a favorite snack?
My guilty pleasure is peanut M&Ms.
Okay, peanut M&Ms. Okay, last question. If you had an ultimate dinner with three people, table at your favorite restaurant, who would those three, living or deceased, who would those three people be?
I'd have dinner with you anytime, Gary.
good answer.
You know, maybe like a Steve Jobs, you know, someone like that, that you know, has been, a great visionary and company builder. You know, I admire the vertical integration and the discipline around that, you know, what we're trying to do here at Cluster Truck. Fred Smith, another one from FedEx. You know, again, I think about like Cluster Truck. You know, Fred Smith had the audacity to say, I need to own the airplane to do this right. And, you know, we think you need to own the kitchen to do this right. You know, so that's our airplane. So,
oh, very good. Very good. Well, you passed the 2-minute drill and flying with flying colors, Chris. So thanks for that. And when we return, we'll talk about Chris Baggett, the early years and how he arrived here in Indiana and a lot more. That's when the Business and Beyond podcast returns.
The Healthiest Employers Award program is now open to companies of all sizes in the state of Indiana. We have created a community of wellness leaders from across the country dedicated to cultivating a more proactive approach to employee health and well-being. To nominate your organization, visit us online at healthiestemployers.com. Healthiest Employers, the nation's leading corporate well-being award.
Welcome back to the Business and Beyond podcast presented by PNC. My guest this week is technology entrepreneur and visionary Chris Baggett. And Chris, you are certainly a high-profile Hoosier today, but you're not a Hoosier by birth. You were born in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Talk about the early years growing up. I know your father passed away when you were in grade school, so had some challenges in the early days.
Yeah. So I was born in Pittsburgh. My mother remarried, and we wound up moving when I was in fourth grade, I think, to a small town called Katanning, which is basically a coal mining town on the river north of Pittsburgh, right? You know, not so much different than Greenfield in that respect. You know, small town, you know, in those days, because I'm really old, there wasn't like a highway. Like, you know, now my town is becoming kind of a commuter town. You know, you can get there in like 35 minutes to Pittsburgh. But when I was a kid, it was like a 2.5 hour drive. So like we never went to the big city or anything like that. Just pretty typical small town. Growing up, you know, I was very fortunate to have met someone that knew how to paddle a kayak, a whitewater kayak. And I got into that extremely early in life. And, you know, that was really like the fundamental thing that changed my trajectory.
Really? We'll talk about that. So kayaking really was had an impact on your life.
Yeah, it was funny, you know, because I grew up again in this small town. You know, most people didn't go to college, and I became a river guide, a whitewater river guide, on a river called the Youghiogheny River, which is in southwestern Pennsylvania and very popular, like class 3-4 rapids. And most of the people in those days who were paddling kayaks were a little bit blue blood. Like, so a lot of my folks that I work with were like Princeton, and people went to Dartmouth. Like Dartmouth had a whitewater kayaking team. And so that kind of elevated my peer group, you know, and, you know, realized that, you know, these people that are going to college aren't smarter than I am, you know, like, you know, even though I was a very bad student, you know, my kids laugh at my report cards because, you know, if I showed a C, like that was like a good thing, like I get a gift, you know, but it's mostly a DNF student. And, but, you know, being around that group and, you know, it's a piece of advice I give kids all the time is like, you know, pay attention to who you're hanging around with matters, right? But that really, you know, that changed my trajectory. Got me, you know, exposed to a small liberal arts school in Washington State called Evergreen College, where I wound up. That led me, you know, to New York, to Chicago. Met Amy from, you know, who's from Indy. We moved to Indy and started dry cleaning. So
that's how you got to Indiana, to Greenfield, as your wife Amy, who's a co-owner now in the business, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we were living in Chicago. And, you know, I wanted to have my own business. I was in the corporate world and, you know, just didn't really, I was doing well, but, you know, you'd look ahead at these jobs. And I know you've been through this experience too. And, you know, you start looking upstream and say, what will I be doing 10 years from now? And say, I don't want to do that. And I thought with dry cleaning, you know, in the day, you know, the entrepreneurial move pre-internet was kind of these roll-ups, right? Like there was a famous one here in Indy, LCI, I think it was called, that was like rolling up funeral homes, and they were worth $1 billion plus. And I thought, well, I'll roll up dry cleaners, right? And as you mentioned earlier, the data aspect of the dry cleaner was interesting to me. I'm Chris. I live on Maple Street. I'll be back on Tuesday. Like McDonald's, you pass through anonymously, but the dry cleaner actually has a lot of data. And I thought, we'll leverage this data and, you know, be the data-driven dry cleaner. Didn't quite work out that very well.
In that iteration or in that example, but ultimately that idea and your fascination with email marketing really led to some much bigger things. Talk about how you took that idea and concept, I think initially to your brother-in-law, Scott Dorsey, well-known technology and entrepreneur here. He was your brother-in-law. You started talking, and that ultimately led to Exact Target, right?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. Yeah, we started, you know, the big problem was I had all this data and I could segment my customers out, you know, and I knew that if I couldn't get to 3 visits from a new customer, 89% of the time I'd never see them again. And I knew, you know, people that spend $100 a month that I haven't seen for 10 days, like I need to act on that data. And the problem became there's no way for me to leverage that, right? I couldn't afford to do print and, you know, telephone calls, you know, I discovered AOL, as we all did, through disks in our email. And, you know, as you said, I put sheets of paper out, literally said, do you have AOL? And people would write down Yahoo addresses and MSN addresses, and it worked really well. And I was at a dry cleaning conference, very sad and pathetic event, that I was sitting around with a couple of other young, early 30-year-old people who decided to get into dry cleaning. And literally, we were just like pouring our tears into our beer. Like, why did we do this? And how did we manage to screw up our lives? And is anything working? And I was like, you know, I'm doing this email thing. And that works. And so these other dry cleaners started sending me their lists. And I would make an email newsletter for my dry cleaner. And then I'd make the same newsletter rebranded for their dry cleaner. So it became a service. And then a friend of mine, Larry Zor, who worked for me, and this is now we're into like 98, 99. Larry was a co-founder of a company called NetDirect. So Larry was driving a van for me. Then he started NetDirect.net, which was like one of the first ISPs, you know, out of Broad Ripple. And they were bought for like $5 million in 1999. And, you know, that got my attention, you know, because they were like a year old, $5 million, holy cow. And there were two software developers, part of NetDirect, that the company that bought them didn't want. And Larry said, you should talk to these two guys. And, you know, one of them, I think, is John Hurley. Mm-hmm. Union 525, you know, and we would go to John. So then Scott came in and we decided we're going to build this software. And John and this other guy, Ben Timby, literally, we would be showing up, Scott and I, on John Hurley's doorstep at 8 o'clock in the morning. Let's go. And he'd be like opening the door. What are you doing here? And, you know, but I mean, that's how it started.
Talk about that. Those early days and starting it. As I mentioned, you were on a windowless little office in back of a McDonald's in Greenfield. But when did you really start to feel traction, because you began to get big name companies, ultimately the Gaps and Nikes and Home Depots and others? What was that like?
Well, it was great. I mean, it was a long, long iteration. You know, I mean, again, the company is 13-year-old overnight sensation, right? And it really accelerated, you know, in later years, right, when we started getting those. And honestly, this is all credit to Scott. You know, the early days, you know, it was a lot, you know, we started with dry cleaners and we were looking at small businesses that had data, pizza shops, video stores. And then we realized selling to small businesses is hard. And, you know, we thought, who's got a lot of small businesses? And we thought franchises, right? We'll build this product for franchises, which really kind of had these rules around, you know, what the franchisee can do and have this parental controls around it. And that was really kind of a breakthrough, because even though the franchise part of that didn't really work as a business model, the tools we built for the franchise really became the enterprise stuff. But what really differentiated us was that data-driven aspect of it. Our competitors were all about throughput. You know, one of the most important meetings of my life, and I'll never forget it, was I got invited to go down to Home Depot. And I'm in Home Depot in Atlanta. I can see my competitors. And one particularly was Cheetah Mail. And Cheetah Mail had way better engineering than we did. And we were a small company. You know, we had like our biggest customers, like Wild Birds Unlimited, sending maybe 20,000 emails at a time. And the first time they sent 20,000 emails, we collapsed. It brought us to our knees. So I go into this Home Depot meeting. They bring me into a room. Cheetah had been there before me. And they're like, we have 6 million email addresses in our database. Our goal is to get to 30 million email addresses by next year. Can your system handle 30 million email addresses? And I knew we could not. And we probably couldn't handle 6 million. So I tried to spin the conversation around to the data. I was like, what are you trying to accomplish with those emails, right? You know, how much does a store make? Do you want email to equal a store? Why don't we make that a goal? And we wound up winning that business. And we actually took that 6 million down to 2.8 million emails, because it was like a super spammy list and bad email addresses. And that was another pivotal thing, is we really got involved in the permission aspect and the anti-spam early. Like our employee number 5 or 6 was a guy named Chip House. And he was totally only, like in our world, this is Bob Compton School 101. You hire people who sell and you hire people who build. And there's nothing in between. And here we hired this spam guy. And I can remember pounding on the table like, no, like, what do we care what our customers mail? And that also turned out to be a decision. I lost that argument, thank goodness, because that really was a pivotal difference for us early on when our bigger competitors, they did not care who their customers were or what they were mailing.
Ultimately, ExactTarget obviously grew exponentially and was a very attractive acquisition target. Salesforce, of course, made that acquisition $2.5 billion, really a headline deal. What do you remember about that and kind of your thought process? And we saw that $2.5 billion number. What were you thinking?
Oh, my. It was a crazy experience. You know, and the whole IPO, you know, and all credit to Scott. As you know, I left ExactTarget in 2006 and started Compendium. And so we were building Compendium. The IPO came along. Scott called me he didn't have to bring me, right? He didn't have to put me on that stage that day. I mean, that's something I will never forget and forever cherish. I mean, that's the experience of a lifetime to stand on that podium, you know, and that was really a gift from Scott that I will never forget.
Yeah.
They outsold. We have a venture capitalist named Scott Maxwell from Insight, and now his firm is OpenView. And Scott called me first thing in the morning. I was driving to work. It was probably 7:30. And he was the first person to tell me. And the joke with Scott was, I don't know if you know this story, but we had the opportunity to be acquired for a pretty significant sum back in 2004. We had just taken our first VC money. We had an opportunity to be acquired. And I wasn't very diluted then. And neither was Scott, right? Because we hadn't taken all those future rounds.
Mm-hmm.
So there was the amount of money I would have made was pretty significant. But the VCs had just got there and they quashed the deal basically. So we couldn't sell because we just did this VC deal. And so it took like 10 years to almost make me whole, if you will, from that initial. And so Scott Maxwell, like that was the joke because we'd always be talking about valuations and funding. And I was like, yeah, but I'm still not quite to where I would have been, you know, if I would have sold when there were 15 of us in the company, you know.
Right, right.
And so that was the first words. He's like, I finally done it. I've done it. You know, like, you've made more money than so it was nice. And obviously it's life changing and it's been community changing. I mean, I think I got 18 K-1s last year, you know, and all of them here in Indy. Like, I don't think I have maybe one or two investments that are not in Indianapolis. And, you know, so the ability to help other startups and feed the community back, it's been a good thing.
And I think very much, Chris, I think it's such an important piece of what you do and others do, Scott, certainly among them, in giving back to community in a big way. As you look to the future, what's next for Chris Baggett?
I'd like to do a little more sailing. I have a sailboat, which I haven't seen in a year and a half. But, you know, I'm really all in on cluster truck. You know, I think we have a huge opportunity here. Everybody is doing it wrong. And, you know, I've said this since the beginning, you know, you've got this massively growing market of prepared food delivery and restaurants aren't happy with it. Delivery people are not happy with it and customers aren't happy with it, right? You go to their reviews and they get one star. You go to ours, we're 5 stars in every market. And that's been our philosophy is like, if we make these constituents happy, we're going to have a really good business. And, you know, you see our drivers just as much as everyone who orders from us, right? These are happy drivers. Like, we have no turnover. We don't have to pay to recruit, right? We post that we need more drivers and we have waiting lists. The customers are happy because we get 5-star reviews. You know, we're in an environment where it's really tough to hire into the kitchen. You know, we don't brag about this, but, you know, nobody makes less than $15 an hour. You know, our competitors like Chipotle, you know, they're talking about by 2024, we'll have a blended average of $15 an hour. Nobody walking in the door makes less than $15 an hour at Cluster Truck. Our employees like it because there's no customer, right? You know, they don't have to deal with customer service issues. If they make a mistake, we'll talk to them about it tomorrow, not in the heat of battle. And so we have the preferred place to work for cooks too. And so we don't have the recruiting problems that a lot of restaurants are having now with labor. So it feels good. You know, the customers are happy. I like that. I like going in and seeing happy employees. And, you know, these drivers, you know, we're literally changing lives with some of these folks. We have this woman who, you know, drives with her baby in the car because she never has to get out of the car. She's been with us since we've opened. Avery, who was an infant, is now 5. She just bought a nicer car than mine. Like she's been through three cars with us. The first one barely ran. The second one was decent. And now she just bought a 2018 Subaru Outback, which is basically what I drive. So, you know, you see that kind of transformation in people's lives. It's just, you know, it's important work and I like it. So I have no plans on quitting.
Yeah, important work indeed. Chris Baggett, really appreciate you taking the time to join us and to catch up here on the Business and Beyond podcast. And I so appreciate the work and the efforts you do to grow, not only grow your businesses, but really grow the economy and the quality of life here in Central Indiana and around the state. So, Chris, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Gary. Appreciate it.
All right. And thank you for joining us on this edition of the Business and Beyond podcast presented by PNC. It is a weekly conversation with achievers in business, sports, entertainment, and beyond. And you can catch all of our episodes and Indiana Business News 24/7. All you have to do is go to insideindianabusiness.com. I'm Gary Dick. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.